Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
Welcome to Untamed Blossoms, the podcast where we celebrate the untamed journey of womanhood. Here, we tell the stories of incredible women who have embraced their authenticity, inspiring others to do the same.
From entrepreneurs to artists, activists to adventurers, we share triumphs, challenges, and the beauty of self-discovery. These are the stories of women blazing their own trails, breaking free, and blooming unapologetically.
Join us to connect, be inspired, and celebrate the power of women's stories. Together, let's rewrite the rules and embrace our wildness.
Welcome to Untamed Blossoms. I'm your host, Amanda Riley.
And I'm Christy Riley. Welcome to the show, everybody. We're excited to have Kara in studio. Welcome to the show, Kara.
Thank you.
Kara Strom. You're welcome. You're welcome. We I heard of you because you took over as, make sure I'm right in the title, director of OEFA, which is Ohio Ecological Farm and Food Association. Food and Farm Association. Yeah. Okay. I'm like, I get them mixed up, which is an amazing organization that we'll talk about eventually. But I love it. We love all the things.
Good local food, farming, good, sustainable. Good, we, good local, sustainable, organic
food. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. So, which is kind of why we moved out here, so that I could grow my own and give it to all of my family members. So everybody's pushing me. Abby, who was part of OEFA before, she's moved on now, and she's like, oh, so you're gonna do this and this and this, and I was like, oh, slow down, Sissy. Slow down. I don't know that I'm gonna start selling anything on the farm. We'll see. That seems like a large commitment. I just want to grow my own food first. We'll see how that goes.
It's a great way to start.
Yeah how it balloons from there, we'll see.
What sparked your passion in sustainability and farming? And
that takes us back.
Okay, let's go.
Well, I spent a lot of time outside as a kid. Okay. And I owe that in large part to my dad, who would take us camping. We did these family camping trips. I don't remember how many. I don't exactly remember where. Maybe I didn't even like it. I mean, I recall family members telling me, like, oh, you never wanted to get dirty. And I'm like, what? Oh, but stick my hands in the dirt now. And it's like,
yeah,
the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah. Right?
So obviously people change and evolve over time.
Yeah.
But we spent a lot of time outside.
Family wasn't farmers. You weren't born into a farm family.
Born into a farming family. My grandfather, my mom's dad, had like a lot and a half or two lots. And so he always had a big garden. So sort of like you, right?
Right.
He could give all this to his family and farmers, but it was no one farms specifically. No, we just, but we've always been, especially my mom's side, gardeners, and cookers.
Yeah.
Chefs, right?
Like, yeah.
We're professional.
Right.
But we've all had this, like my cousins, my mom, her siblings, all this like thread, this through line of food and
feeding people.
And feeding people.
Yeah.
So, but that, I mean, so that was part of it as well, I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
Having that. But I remember, you know, people often ask me before I was at OEFA, My career was in ornithology and avian conservation. And
oh, very cool.
I ended up doing that on farms, which is how I then got into farms. Like, I was working on farms with landowners before I knew I was working on farms with landowners. And I looked back at some point and was like,
oh,
that's what I was doing when I called up that cold call a landowner. Hey, I need to catch some birds.
Yeah.
Is it cool if I come down and do that on your farm?
Okay. That's awesome.
But yeah, and that was all, you know, the getting into the environment was really related to being outside. Yeah. And even if we weren't camping, I was still outside a lot.
Yeah.
We had a really nice yard growing up, swing set, just being outside has always been my place to be, even now.
Mm-hmm.
Just put me outside, please.
Yeah,
me too. You're in kinfolk here.
Yeah. Yeah, just put me outside.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you like get a special degree to go into ornithology? Did I say that right?
Yep, you said it right. Ornithology. I have a master's in biology from Kansas State, but my thesis was around birds and specifically shorebirds. But not shorebirds at the shore. Shorebirds in the central flyway. So Texas, Kansas, Nebraska.
Oh.
Yeah. Farmland. Yeah. So birds that would that go and they have a different migratory pattern. They're not thought of when you think of shorebird migration, you think, well, maybe you don't. But many people think about these. Well, yes, no. These champions of migration, right? That they will be in the winter, they'll be in Tierra del Fuego, and in the breeding season, they're up on, you know, in the Arctic, and they're just making these transnational migrations because they don't know any boundaries, right?
Yeah. Right.
They're like, we need food, and this is how we evolved to do it, and this is what we do.
This is what we do, yeah.
And they oftentimes at the large estuaries on either coast, in the specific times of year, like March, April, you'll see these huge flocks of them. And it's just, I love it so much still. But I live in Ohio now, and that doesn't happen here. So I have to either go or look at my photos.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
One or the other.
Like my annual Mecca out to appreciate the birds. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I did that working with birds in the central flyway and was actually looking at pesticide, a very specific pesticide exposure. But there's been declines in a lot of birds for a long time. There's all kinds of reports and data you can read about that. And they were looking for, hey, what could this be? Like, we have all these hypotheses, and one of them was exposure to pesticides in these fields that they go into, right? It could be rice fields, corn stubble fields, anything that creates the kind of conditions that they like. And it's so sample shorebirds in 3 states here in the US and in 3 countries in South America.
How many? So walk me through it.
Yes.
You're a freshman in college and you're like, I'm going to study birds.
No, actually, that's
not school to get to birds. Were you like bird watching as a child, as a high schooler? No, birds were not fascinating.
It really came. I mean, my grandmother was a bird watcher, right? Like, I think I probably have her bird guide from her. You know,
that's awesome. Yeah,
it's very cool. But I went to college. I went to undergrad as a pre-veterinary student because that's all I knew, right? I mean, I you know, my mom was a teacher. My dad was on the fire department. I had friends, parents who were doctors and nurses and very just more conventional. And I didn't have a lot of, well, I know about this alternative job I'm going to have. Like, I had no idea. And when I went to undergrad, I actually went to Ohio Wesleyan, not too far from here, and had some incredible professors and teachers who were doing the thing. Like, they, I mean, granted, they were in academia, but they had these research projects. And I got, and like, I banded birds at my major professor's house in Ashley, Ohio, held my first cardinal, and just, what is this thing with feathers in my hand? I mean, it was incredible. And it kind of just,
a love you didn't know you had until you had it.
Yeah. And I didn't, you know, I was like, I worked at a vet clinic. I worked at a shelter. I volunteered I think it was the Humane Society. And I just, you know, it would have been a good job.
Yeah.
It would have been a very good job. And sometimes I think, huh, why didn't you do that? But I also was in this place after, you know, you're in school for how many years mm-hmm. and you get to college and I'm like, I still have to do more school. And veterinary school is so competitive.
Yeah.
Because there's
really,
there are fewer veterinary schools than medical schools. Oh, wow. I forget how many there are. I don't even know if I know the number, but there's not one. And there's not even 50 because there's not one in every state. And I was just tired.
Yeah. You're like, nah.
And I was like, so what's my alternative? You know? And these people, my professors were so passionate about what they did. It's like, all right, well, let's explore this. Let's see what else is out there. And after, so I changed my major. I did environmental studies and zoology, a minor in chemistry. Because why? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then the real journey began of like, now what? Yeah. To your point.
Right.
Now, right. Like what is happening now? And so I spent a summer back home in Akron. I grew up in Akron and spent a summer being a temp. You know, temp agency. Mm-hmm. Yep. Was a temp. I sat at the desk at the foot of this building and studied for my GRE.
Right. Well,
because I literally had
nothing to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. ooh, this is. And so
you're like, literally, you just want me to sit here all day and do what? They're like, just that. Just sit there. Yeah. If that phone rings, what do I say? Well,
here's the script. And there were like three different companies housed in the same building. Yeah. So I was like, oh, this line is for this. This line is.
Got it.
And
if anybody walks in, I can direct them to the floor. And that's all I do. Okay.
Yeah. So I set it for my GREs and took those. But I realized like, wow, I have to do something that I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
And so I tried to work all the connections that I had, you know, like electric companies. A lot of the utility companies need biologists because they have to do surveys along their right of ways. They need to, I'm not even sure what they need to do, but they need biologists to do this survey work. Yeah. And so I couldn't quite figure out how to get the in, you know, I knew some people in consulting and that is a whole other ball of wax that you need special training for. And at the time, you know, I thought, I need to make money. So there was this push pull between like being an intern and getting experience and just trying to get a job.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess I did a little of both. I started my first sort of field job was at Pocosin Lakes National Wildlife Refuge, which is on the coastal plain of North Carolina. There is a small town called Columbia. Small. We're not talking South Carolina. This is Columbia, North Carolina on the Scuppernong River. And we were, like a half an hour from there? On Lake Phelps. It was amazing. It was such an amazing experience to be down there. The wildlife biologist on staff was amazing. She treated us so well. It was me and two other interns. And then from there, I basically rolled into this lifestyle for 4 years-ish, where it still happens today. We still need people in the field actually collecting data on birds. They collected on insects, butterflies, like whatever, but I focused on birds. And that's kind of where the most of it happened to be. So I would roll around in my Honda Civic and roll up to a new place in a new state and live there for 3 months, do the field work, roll on to a new place. So, you know, you get somewhere and then you're already applying for other field jobs.
Yeah.
Super.
That's amazing.
So much fun.
How many different like states did you get to visit and do work in?
13.
Wow.
Nice. I think.
Yeah.
You know, I went from North Carolina to Pennsylvania, trapped white-tailed deer in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Went up to North Dakota. Amazing. Worked on piping plovers. My project. Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Oh, but that was beautiful.
Southern California, Idaho, New Jersey. Wow. Or the shorebird migration.
Yeah. And so this led you to the, I need my master's degree. Is it?
Yes.
So this is still no job. Doing right.
This was just
loving
like,
the field work, yeah, but not really work and finding anything permanent.
Yeah. Like 6 months was the longest. And it's interesting because you look back and hindsight is always like, oh, I could have rolled into this thing where I did here and then here. But I didn't really know that. It didn't sink in. I just had me to tell me these things.
Yeah.
So I was kind of paving my own way, right?
Right.
This was super fun, right? I mean, it was great. So I ended up going to Kansas State University in Manhattan, Kansas for my did the reverse migration from Southern California to not the middle of Kansas, but pretty close. And did my master's there, which was the project on migratory shorebirds and ecotoxicology, really was like the sort of area, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. And went to grad school. And then, I mean, that was a whole other journey in and of itself, right? I mean, yeah. I was away in the field or at a lab more than I was actually on campus because I had two co-advisors who were in Illinois and Texas. And then, you know, I had these field sites that were not spanning the whole Western hemisphere, but I had a lot of places to be and go. And it was super fantastic for that time of my life.
Yeah.
I got to see more countries in South America between that and meetings where I'd present on my work. I mean,
yeah.
That's really great.
I love that.
Did you you're traveling, right? You're doing these things. Like, what are you finding out about yourself during this process? Like, what are you discovering about who you really are?
I wonder if I learned it then or if I learned it later.
Okay.
That is a great question.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the need for exploration is like really alive in me.
Yeah.
Whether that is like.
What's your sun sign?
Pisces.
And your moon?
I'm full of water. That's all I have to say.
I feel like I got water everywhere.
In my, one of the signs, I think it's my rising sign. It's also on the cusp of Cancer. Mm. Scorpio and. Watch out. Here's the wave. Goals.
Okay.
Yeah. We're either calm or. Yeah,
or crashing.
lots of waves, people.
So you're like, travel is important, exploration is important. So you're like really
thinking that you're a young girl, right? Like you're.
Yeah, I'm still pretty. I mean, I was a non-traditional grad student because I was like 25 or 26 or something and graduated with my degree when I was 28. Yeah. I mean, I'm still pretty young, but I think for me, because I had, it's just. Opened up just things I never would have learned about. And I am a, if nothing else, a lifelong learner. And I think that as part of the exploration is just like, oh, what's this?
Yeah.
So whether that's an external, you know, whether you see it externally or whether that's an internal deep dive, like exploration is just kind of the name of the game.
Yeah,
So that was definitely the outward facing. But then when I actually landed in a place, right, and could be somewhere, then that like allowed the internal exploration to happen. So I think it's all come.
You weren't traveling with anyone. You were going to all these places alone, didn't know anybody, just place to place every few months.
As a young girl. I'm sure my parents were thrilled. That's over. Like,
where is she today? I don't know.
Nobody's heard from her. Of some of the phone calls he received. Because I'd be like, Dad, I need some help. No, I didn't ever get myself into like I for all the traveling I did, I was extremely lucky because when I was in the field with people, we were generally in the field together, but the to and from, you know. Yeah. That was me.
Yeah.
In my car.
Wow.
Calling Dad when something went awry.
He was just so, you know, he is very calm.
Right.
And he would know, okay, here's a logical thing to do. And okay, cool. You know, but obviously somebody taught me well because I got a flat tire and I'll freak out, you know?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And luckily those happened like overnight or, you know, like the things I'd be like, fixed. It didn't like blow out on the road or
didn't have cell phones then that you were carrying around with you or yes. Did you have a cell phone then?
Oh, I'm sure they still one.
Yeah.
I'm certain because I think I got one at the end of college, like for emergencies. So I'm sure that.
Got it. Okay. Okay.
Yes. I'm sure that was a requirement.
I was like,
was this like subsidized?
Cost of that time or,
to just give them peace of mind.
Yeah.
You know, I feel really, really lucky.
Yeah. So when you were done traveling, when you came back, where did you land? Like, what was your first like gig that was like, this is permanent ish? I feel like I already know you. I'm like, I think could be permanent.
Well, I wanted after grad school, I did a couple more temporary gigs. Yeah. I'm going to call them a gig. Because that's what I found. Classic. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go here and do that. I'm sure I'll take this temporary job. Well, that didn't work out. So back on my own again. So I ended up working in the South San Francisco Bay for USGS, United States Geological Survey. They did research. Not sure how much it's still funded these days. But I did I never intended to stay, right?
Yeah.
I was going to do this job. And then I was like, well, I need another job. So I was applying to full-time. They always caveated that this is a, you know, grant-funded position. So it's a year with a possible extension. Mm-hmm. So I landed a position. I actually landed when it rains, it pours. I think I had more than one offer. And I was like, wow, okay. I mean,
lucky me.
Yeah.
And I did. The only thing that I knew how to do was like, okay, the benefits are good. I stay here. So I worked, it is now called Point Blue Conservation Science. I started there when it was the Point Reyes Bird Observatory. And I was doing what I did best, working on shorebirds on agricultural fields in the Central Valley of California.
Yeah.
Like I have won the lottery. This is my train job.
It was pretty much like, okay.
Yeah.
So I worked there for, and I did other things while I was there. That was the biggest part of my work for 4.5 years, I think.
Yeah.
And then moved to a similar and related position at Audubon, California, and Audubon that's part of the National Audubon Society. We worked really closely together, Point Blue, Audubon, and the Nature Conservancy had this really amazing partnership to work together to increase pace and scale of bird conservation in the Central Valley. So our specific focus of what I did was on water birds in agriculture, mostly rice fields, but we did work in alfalfa. We worked in everything really that we could, that we knew had some kind of bird value to it.
Yeah.
So I spent, I didn't plan to stay, but 13 years passed.
Wow. That's a long time to be like, oops.
He's like, and then,
well,
like,
to be fair, I knew that knew that I wanted to come home, right, to my home state. But it's a process to move yourself across the country and move your career. And like, I don't have a family. I never had kids. So it wasn't like I had that, but just, you know, knowing that I wanted to keep like some line in my life.
Yeah.
So, you know, enter career coach. I am all about support and help. And like, she kept me focused. Just, it is such a big job.
Yeah.
To think about like, did I want to stay in what I was doing? Because what if that wasn't available or
right.
what the landscape was going to be like here in Ohio. Right. So, lots of feelers, lots of work, lots of tears. Nope, didn't get that job.
Yeah. An
interview. Oh, I was second.
Damn it. Ah.
Yeah.
There's some, it's like, yeah, okay. You might think I'm willing to take risks, but I will only go so far. Because I wasn't willing to just pack up and move back. I didn't, you know, in hindsight, again. My family would have helped and supported me through that journey, but I didn't.
Yeah.
So
you were just trying to make sure that you had your ducks in a row and you wanted to be.
I was trying to be in a responsible adult. Right. Totally. Do the right thing.
And your parents still lived here in Akron.
They live, my mom lives in Copley, so west of Akron, and my dad lives in Newton Falls, which is east of Akron. So they went to the opposite directions from Akron, but Akron is still, you know, it's where I grew up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I go up there. No one really lives, no one in my family lives in Akron proper anymore.
Yeah. In that area.
Yeah. Yeah. People are still there. So
I'm interested in your thoughts. So, you know, talking about research and all of these things that you're doing, we're definitely in a scary time right now where a lot of things are being defunded. And I don't think people truly understand the importance of research on our environment and the animals and how that impacts food and how that it's a chain reaction. Yep. And I do not think we get a lot of, especially women, talking about the impact of research. I think people think, well, just extra money. Who cares about research?
Who cares about those birds? Why does she have shoreline birds? Who cares about that shit?
And I do think that the lack of education about understanding the importance of this is what's why we're almost here, right? Because
I literally had the same question I'm getting right now. So like,
please
talk about why research birds? Why research anything, right? And we're such a reactionary group of group, right? Humans are just like, fuck it until we kill people.
Too late.
And the whole environment. And they were like, maybe we shouldn't have done that.
And even still, then we don't believe people.
Well, yeah.
Even for ourselves, right?
Yeah.
I think that I was just sitting on the porch with my boyfriend and like, isn't it interesting? Like, here's this two-lane road outside your house and it's everything feeds together just like inside of us, right? We have major arteries, we have veins, we have aorta, and we have these tiny little capillaries. And I was just likening that to roads in Ohio, right?
You have these big
five-lane highways, and then you have these country roads that you're like, I don't know if we can pass each other here.
No, definitely can't. You got to back up. You know, we got to wait till somebody gets into a driveway situation. Yeah.
But I think that we, somewhere along the line, I don't know where it broke down, right? Mm-hmm. I think that probably before, I'm just going to throw out the Industrial Revolution. I don't know that that's the date.
Yeah.
I think we lived in a more holistic way. I think we were thinking about, well, if A, then B, and how are we going to get this? And how do we plan for this food for then? Because we had to. And then we created this society and culture where we don't have to think about things anymore, whether it's our food or even just our bodies. Like there's a larger...
It's like a huge disconnect.
It's a disconnect. Because everything is now compartmentalized. And, you know, you think about medicine too, right? Like we treat a symptom we don't treat the cause.
Right.
You know, so I'm thinking the same way about our environment. Like, let's put a Band-Aid on this thing over here. But what we're not understanding as a larger culture is everything is connected, just like in your body. So, functional medicine is this, I'm very much into functional medicine. And as someone with a thyroid autoimmune issue, I'm like, why?
Right.
What triggered it?
Why is this happening?
Yeah.
Exactly. And can I do something instead of just popping a pill every morning to control my whatever it is?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's the root cause. And here's the thing. I'm going to go down this medical analogy.
It's okay.
Because
we seem to have a theme here, but I guess
because it's also though out of reach for so many people. Because guess what? Insurance doesn't cover functional medicine. If you actually want to know, like the way that we're structured in our here, I will just talk about this country. It's to do that. It's to treat the symptoms, but not the whole thing. And it's the same way in our environment, in our food systems, right?
Because I think we're having a more of a wake up to the medicine stuff, and we definitely talk about it ad nauseum, unfortunately. For
it's like listening. We are bashing the Western medicine
constantly. So, you know. But I think that there is definitely a movement there. I have the biggest concern about our environment, though, the biggest right now, because it is so scary to see national parks not have the support that they need. Right. And it's so nerve wracking to me to think that people are thinking now about medicine as we're 20 years out from people thinking the same way about our environment.
Yeah, it's true. Our environment to me includes food and farming.
Yes.
Because we're farming in our environment.
Totally. Right?
There I like to think about, so farmers aren't the original stewards because we had stewards long before, right? Totally. But they are on the land on a daily basis. Like they see what's changing. They know what's changing. They see what happens to their crops. And whether you're conventional or organic and sustainable, you're still seeing. Like that mm-hmm. conventional farmer is still noticing differences based mm-hmm. on the environment, the weather, because the inputs that farmer has to put in changes based yeah. on those things. So they're still out there. They see the wildlife or the lack of wildlife, yeah. right? Any farmer, anyone who's out there on a daily basis. And I think, you know, I think I said, I don't know if we were on air yet or not, but I'm like, yeah, put my hands in the ground. And like,
yeah,
I feel a connection to being outside and to nature, whether that is planting a garden or flowers or walking in a park.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we've gotten so disconnected from that largely, right, as a society. Like, I'm glad that the national parks are overrun because people, you know, they're like, yeah. oh, I gotta see these beautiful places. But it's also so important to know that you have nature in your backyard
totally.
And down the street. And it doesn't have to be, for a lot of people, it's not a national park. It is the park down the street because they don't have access to go yeah. to a national park.
Right.
Right.
Or maybe it is their backyard garden if they can do that. But there's so many people, whether we're living in an urban area or we're just inside on a television or a phone or these things. And it's like, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go outside.
Because then you're not, it's the art of noticing. And it when is, you
yes.
aren't outside, you're not able to notice all these huge problems that are happening because you're so, why would you? Why would yeah. you? You can Amazon something or, you know, get your groceries delivered or, yes. you know, you can do all these convenient things. You never have to leave your house. Yeah. And then, like, mm-hmm. don't even start me up. Oh, I'm already panicking about yards and grass and not a pollinator. You know, there's just so many things and the yeah. trickle of all of that.
The trickle,
it's yeah. so important and people just don't think about it.
No. And that is, it's finding that, like, how do we connect it to people? Like, why should someone care? Like you were saying, oh, why does someone care about the shorebirds? Well, it's funny because my graduate student comrades would ask, well, we're doing cancer research. Why do we care about the shorebirds?
Yeah.
Like, because it's all connected.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I can't give you like the best answer off the right. top of my head, but because it is all connected
yeah.
and that decrease in population here means something is happening along the way.
Absolutely.
The and whether or not you feel the impact of that or that, whether it's, you know, it could be an environmental thing that then maybe it does have some sort of economic impact. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily have all of that mapped out,
yeah.
But it's certainly having impacts. Whether we have them documented or not, right. you know?
Absolutely. So what made you kind of pivot then away from doing your bird research yeah. and all of that to saying like, wow, I'm going to dig in and see what's happening here on these farms?
So I had the farming background as part of my bird work. And when I was looking for jobs and positions back here in Ohio, what I landed, and what was happening here in Ohio was mainly related to farming and the environment. So there's some really great groups doing work with farmers and, trying to enhance the environment, right? Implementing practices that will filter water, you know, so the water that runs off is cleaner when it goes into the waterway, right? Mm-hmm. So then it's cleaner when it dumps into the Western Lake Erie Basin and we're not having these harmful algal blooms. That's like a really big example that I think a lot of people can understand. So I landed a position leading a small land trust at Kenyon College and started there. And that was it was a pivot for me, right? Because I was, easements. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. How do we, and for me was a lot about what are the environmental, there's some jargon, right? Like environmental services or ecological services. Like what is the benefit of preserving this land, yeah. other than it won't be developed, mm-hmm. but it's also providing so many ecological services in terms of it provides habitat, right? It's not creating, if you pave it over and create a shopping mall,
mm-hmm. right?
Not only do you have, right, the heat index, you have the habitat goes away, you have a lot more runoff. There's so many things we could talk about. That's, and then, yeah, from there, that's kind of just stayed with farming in that way. Like I didn't find the exact match to what I was doing here, but I had the skills and the background to be successful still working with farmers. Cause really you're talking to people, right? And, yeah. and you're just right. creating relationships with people.
You literally are combining all of your jobs.
Yeah.
Into
yeah.
one with this one. Like it yeah. all culminated into this one yeah. thing, totally. You know, which I think yeah. is really interesting yeah. that's how it yeah. worked out, you know, yeah, that
exactly.
And I think that's an interesting point. I, you know, Amanda and I never set out to badmouth anybody or any group.
Yeah.
I just think it's about awareness, right? And I think yeah. that humans in general just don't tend to pay, like really do our due diligence to understand the downstream effects of whatever it is that we're doing, whatever product we're creating, yes. whatever development we're doing. And it is all impactful. And you know, a simple thing like when we bought this place, our septic tank is a bubble septic tank. And if they don't let you have them anymore, because if you don't maintain them, you literally will end up dumping raw sewage into our fields and streams back here. And then, you know, which is what was happening when we went into contract and we had to have it. They had to fix okay. it before we bought it.
Yeah.
And I was like, who approve these yeah. right? And then the health department didn't have enough people to
yes.
come out and look at them and inspect them to make sure that what they were doing. And so then it became, we didn't have the funding for it, and right. And so mm-hmm. what seemed like a good idea in the beginning
yeah.
ends up being an ecological nightmare.
Yes.
For potentially all of your neighbors, by the yeah. way. You're dumping raw sewage maybe at a bunch of people, right?
Yeah.
Into, and then what's that doing to the wildlife? What's that doing downstream, right? Like, I yeah. mean, the grass, I'm sure, is loving it out there. But other than that, yeah. right? Not much
yeah.
more.
Yeah.
And so it was just an interesting, we seem to be reactive instead of proactive. Yeah. I think that's the best thing to describe it,
yeah. Yeah.
is that we're just really reactive. Like, you know, 3M is, you know, is that the sticky company?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was a they were doing to the environment.
Yeah.
Nobody, but they had approval to do everything they were doing. And then suddenly it was like, oh, everybody's dying around you. Huh.
Yeah.
Maybe we should look into why that's happening. Right. And so it comes after lawsuits and, you know, and tobacco's good for you. If you smoke it, you'll lose weight. You should do that while you're pregnant. Right. Later. That's what doctors used to tell women. No kidding. Like, this is my point, right?
Yeah.
It's all consumer based. Like, We're just driving consumerism, and we're not really thinking about what the downstream effect of all yeah. of those things are, all yeah. of the things. And
it's always bigger, more, you know,
way never, more than you think. Yeah, way think, more.
I mean, we like, overproduce. I mean, the amount of that we produce and waste, and even especially like protein, that hurts my heart to think that we are, you know, I've been vegan, I've been vegetarian, I am not anymore. But to think about producing cows and pigs and chickens.
Yeah.
These are living.
Say more about that. Because I don't think people know about that, right? It's like, say more about that.
I'm going to talk about my great aunt for a minute. She yeah. passed at the beginning yeah. of the month. So this is great. I'm going to talk about her now. And I remember sending her, she was great. I remember either showing her pictures from one of my field jobs, and we would catch birds. So small songbirds. You catch them in mist nets, put bands on them, you get long-term data. That's usually the overall goal. Some folks are doing it for short-term, like these shorter graduate projects. But you catch them and yeah, they kind of freak out because they're stuck, you know? Yeah. And so she made this comment to me about it, something about that, like, oh, isn't that like really stressful for them? And I was like, yeah. And I didn't say it at the time, but in my mind, I was like, do you eat chicken? Because how do you think the chickens feel when they're crammed into
these cages. They can't get up. They're either fryer hens, you know, destined to be the next thing you bake in the oven or the Costco bakes in their oven, or they're egg-laying hens. Their life is just to produce something for us, and there is, it's not fun, right?
Yeah.
And the same for, like, the cows,
dairy right? cows.
Any of it. So yeah. The way in which food is produced, like, it doesn't just come. I mean, I had, and my mom was a teacher, and I don't know if it was her or someone else who, you know, asked a student, well, where do you get your milk? Where does the milk come from? Not where you get it. Where does it come from? Well, it comes from the grocery store. Mm. Well, no. Actually, it comes from the cow on the farm, and there's this whole process of how it gets then to your grocery store. And we just lose sight of those things because we have everything at our disposal all the time, right? We're not milking our own cows anymore. We're not milling our own grain. We have no idea what goes into the package, whether it is a package of chicken breast or whether it's a box of crackers. We've just lost touch with how that all gets produced. And yeah. It's just, it's really taken for granted. And I mean, our body should be our temple. And like what we put into it should be like the best, right? Like we are all queens, kings, princes, yeah. princesses. Like yeah. take care of this vessel because yeah. it's the one you got, right?
And what's even more maddening is now because we're so consumer driven,
yeah.
the cheapest things are the most processed. And then you have a bunch yes. of people who literally cannot afford to treat their body the way it deserves.
Exactly. And that's what I mentioned when I was talking about functional yeah. medicine, right?
Yeah.
It's like these things are out of reach for a lot of people. Totally. And then they get a bad rep.
Totally.
Oh, they're not doing enough. And I'm like,
yeah.
We haven't really created a system.
Totally.
To help them. We haven't.
And even like education, like you mentioned, of where things actually come from. Yeah. You have a generation of people who have never not had a cell phone, who have never not had access to yeah. more information than anyone ever needs, you yeah. know, like, and there's a double-edged sword there. We talk about this a lot too. You can learn. People are making sourdough bread and they're doing all these things yeah. and they're learning how to have chickens and stuff by watching people on TikTok across yes. the country have chickens. And then you have these people doing amazing, beautiful things because they're able to get that access. So I do think we're shifting back around a little bit. To that information being helpful
yes.
And getting people interested in that lifestyle because it seems so, so unique, so weird. Like this person, like they have their own chicken. Like I want to do that. So great. Let the mystery continue, you know, because it's allowing people to be interested in making their own yeah. food again.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That is a benefit, right?
Hopefully.
That we can learn from those things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Once again, COVID was the stopgap and all that, right? COVID yeah. was the pause that made everybody stop and go, what in the fuck are we doing?
Yeah.
Right. What am I doing in my job? What am I doing in my career? What's this food? Why are we inside? It gave everybody a pause to really yeah. evaluate. There was a huge exodus out of the cities into the, you know, into, yeah. into the suburb and out into the country. You know, to go from being in the city to homesteading is quite the leap. I don't know how many people have survived that, but
that's a good question.
Or relationships for that.
Yeah, yeah, that would be a huge jump. But I understand it, and in some ways, that's what we did. We lived in suburbia, New Albany, and I was like, I need some space. And then you get out here, and it's a lot of work, and you know, it's way more than we were anticipating. And we still own businesses, and you know, have a bunch of kids and grandkids, and it's a thing. But it's also worth it. It's also worth it. It's worth the work. And I'm grateful. And if anything, and if our government ever, you know, implodes, I have a space that I can have chickens. I'm choosing not to now because my neighbor down the way has chickens and I can just go get her eggs, yeah. which yeah. is great, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And so it becomes an immediately, what I love about being out here is that immediately my neighbors brought me chickens the other day. So no, we had extra and I gave her my extra cucumbers nice. And you know, like. Yeah. And so there's
it builds that community.
It's there's this weird communal thing that immediately happens mm-hmm. out in the more rural areas versus mm-hmm. you could live in the suburbs next to somebody for 10 years and barely speak to them. And it's an interesting phenomenon that happens that is not taking place out here that I was like, oh, this is so much nicer.
I remember going to my neighbors to ask them if they had a cup of sugar.
Yep.
Or two eggs.
Or an eggs.
We don't have this.
Yeah. 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 And people would never think about that anymore, you know? No. You would just be like, no, because you just go to the grocery. You don't ask your neighbor. You just go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's been a really cool experience here and a learning curve of, well, this is a lot. And I don't want to add animals on top of this now. We're just barely keeping the land at bay. You know what I mean? It had been neglected for a few years. And so we're just trying to take it back. We got to take it back. But it's an interesting phenomenon that we're going through currently. And that's how we got, I've always been interested in organic farming and understanding the connection between what we're putting on our food and consuming means disease or the lack thereof, right? And we should have access to more. We throw away more organic food because it goes to waste or people don't buy it in our grocery stores. And it's such a shame, you know, when you have people that can't afford it that could have benefited from that.
Yes.
And I don't know how to fix that process. Other than
it just being local. If there are any listeners that have ideas.
But I would like to be a part of that conversation, right? Yeah. How do we switch from, we talk about end-stage consumerism a lot on this podcast, mostly her and I. Our guests are like, whatever you say.
But we're late-stage consumerism right now, capitalism, and it's killing us all. And they're like,
it's killing Mother Earth. And we're like, they're like, okay, moving on.
I'm right there with you.
I would like to be a part of the conversation of what then what? Okay, if we are at late stage consumerism, then what? It has to be a huge shift. And I still believe in the 90-10 rule. If 10% of the population can shift the other 90%, I want to be part of the 10%. Yes. Let's be a part of the conversation that's changing how we're doing things.
Well, I feel like you're probably doing a lot of that with OFA, right? Like that's you're going out there and having these conversations. So can you talk a little bit about the organization and what you do and why it's so important?
Yes, and before I forget, I do – so – the community is one of the values that not only the staff, but the members of OFA like hold dearest. So when we have surveyed prior to me being on board, surveyed the membership community, when we surveyed the membership for like, what are the values, you know, community has been the biggest one. And recently, you know, as part of my work with staff, okay, what are our staff, like how do we want this organization to be internally? And community is the biggest one. And so there's a thread there, right? Between the, you know, creating and being stewards and growing your own food and community. So that's really cool. Before I forgot
about
it.
I agree. Yeah, totally agree.
Well, it's only been a year and 4 months. OFA was founded in 1979. And it was founded by people who wanted to do things differently. Like before there was a USDA organic, there were various different certifying organizations, and people in Ohio came together to form OFA to then have this uniform standard for this area and this state, right? And then the National Organic Program, I will misspeak if I give you a year, but it's like 25 years old. It's not that old. So there has been interest in organic and that movement since long before. But because now we have these national standards, you know, OFA can certify someone in California and someone in California can certify someone in Ohio because it's all the same standards. There are other non-federal standards, and we have relationships with some of them, but in large part, the USDA organic is what we and other organizations follow. And that's only like half of what OFA does. So we're like two legal entities. We have a 501c5, which is an agricultural nonprofit. And then which does our certification, which is when you see that USDA organic seal, that's the work that they do with various other entities across the country. And then we have
they come out to places and inspect and make sure people are up to par.
So the farmers that want to be certified organic have to submit an organic systems plan every year.
Every single
year.
Wow.
And they have to be inspected every single year. So we do some of the inspections. And then we work with contractors to do some of these because we certify in a 12-state region. So, you know, Missouri is kind of a long way for folks to go. So if we have someone that's local and is trained and can do the work, we will contract with them to do it. And then the other side of the organization is a 501c3. So you're more traditional charitable education nonprofit. And that side of the organization is really been focused on providing resources and tools to those farmers that are being certified, right?
Yeah.
As a certification entity, there's a very fine line between giving, like, how to fill out this form versus what you can try on your farm or how to try something on your farm. So we're really unique in that we have staff on the 501c3 side who can provide that consultation to the organic farmers on like, well, I can actually have a conversation with you about what you can try, because there really are a lot of pioneers in the local and organic sustainable farming and food movement, right? It is not the conventional. So you need to have that support in that community in order to make those things happen, because you're not following the status quo.
Totally.
And then on top of that,
you
help farmers who want to convert from conventional farming, conventional
transition to organic, or to
a sustainable farming
methods,
which is for those of you who don't understand that, they basically end up in debt to the big companies that provide seed. Is how I understand it, right? Is that they get in bed, you know, and then you have to in order, if you buy seed from them, you have to also fertilize and do all the things so that you're successful, so that you don't lose money, so that you can pay back the loan. And then this weird, vicious loop of finances that you have to be involved in. And to get out of that is what I understand fairly difficult.
It depends on scale too.
Okay.
So I think it's relative to scale, but yes, I mean, there are a lot of things at work that even I don't know about or understand.
Got
for
it.
Sure.
I would love, like, is there anything that you haven't touched on so far? Like, you're like, this is really important for people to know. And maybe it's part of your journey or what you do in your career, or just anything that you're like, this is really crucial.
Our mission is that sustainable and organic farmers thrive. Local food nourishes our community, and environmental practices enhance our environment. So that really, for me, like farming practices enhance our environment, just like, and then we have farmer, like organic and sustainable farmers thriving, but also that food gets into our community. I have been so shocked by the things that I have learned just about like, okay, well, why is local important?
Yeah.
Because food loses nutritional value.
Yep.
And we import something like 70% of our fruits and vegetables. So granted, we can't grow everything here, but that's also just part of the global economy, right? If we were still eating locally, and that's one of the things I would love to have at OFA is a consumer-based, or a consumer-facing program where, you know, people that have questions or want to learn, whether it's about gardening or just how do you eat healthy and what is local to Ohio and how do we eat
in harmony
with nature and seasonally, because it can feel really daunting if you don't know and you're just used to getting a tomato in December.
Yeah.
Okay. But those tomatoes aren't good. You and I know.
No, I would love it. And I will tell you, when I started this journey, finding, if you just had a list of where to find it, I can't tell you how many I was like, I want to support all sustainable farmers. If you're doing sustainable agriculture, I'm there. And I would look them up and I would go to their farm and they would be like, yeah, we had two babies last summer. We're not selling to the community. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like it happens.
Those kind of things. Yeah. Right. And so I'm like, who has local turkeys I can get? Who has local chickens I can get? Who has local beef that I can buy? Yes. How do you get it? How do you connect with those people? If that would be on your website, I would love that. Okay.
It's coming.
Perfect.
I think it's not on there. I'm like, have I missed it?
We have had in the past and are relaunching the Good Earth Guide, which is a place where right now it is just for OFA members. So you need to be a member of OFA, which is only $60 a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So if you are someone who is producing raw milk or any of those things that you just mentioned.
Yes.
As an OFA member, you can create your profile online and you'll be in the Good Earth Guide. We hope to have it launched by the end of the year. It keeps getting pushed back. The end of the year is a good time, I think. But that will be reinvigorated. So it's going to have, hopefully, it will be linked to websites and, you know, have contact information for folks so that you can look locally to you and figure out. What is it? Or like beans, right? There's a great folks down in Southeast Ohio who you can buy a lot of beans in there.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Right. Right.
So.
It's and that coming, you can have the convenience of it. It would be so cool to, and I would totally be happy to be involved in any of that. But the convenience of the Amazon buy, right? Where you're like,
yeah,
I want to buy local,
yeah,
but I also don't want to drive to Southeast Ohio. So correct. Can I go to their website and have that shipped to me? And I'm willing to do that, right? But but I still am supporting within my local environment. And I think there's lots of people who would do that, but it's labor intensive to find the folks, you know.
Yellowbird Food Shed in up in Mount Vernon is great about that. Benji does a lot of sourcing from local in Ohio, right? I don't know his exact delivery radius, but I know he delivers, like he took like the CSA model and turned it and did it for like other other foods. So it's you know, but it's also you're not going to get all the same things all the time,
right?
Because that's not the nature of that.
Kind it's of, about right? learning like that too. That like we're not meant to. Amount of convenience. It's not good for our environment to have this amount of convenience.
So. My daughter-in-law and son would love that if they got a box of like
whatever.
From Ohio and whatever showed up, and then I have to cook based on that and figure out what I can make. They would love that.
There, Chef Megan, another shout out. She does ready-made meals, and she again, it's one person, so there's only
so much she can do.
But she is getting, she is getting chicken from Sweetgrass Dairy up in Fredericktown and like using that in her. So it's sustainably organic raised and like using that in her dishes. And that's just amazing. So I'm going to support her when I don't have time to cook.
Right. We'll make sure that we, in our show notes, tag some of these people that you mentioned today and the OFA website too, because I think having the resources is half the battle.
It is. And it's just like the Good Earth Guide is going to be on our website. If there are any app developers out there that have some free time on their hand and they want to help us make an app.
Lovely.
Get in touch because
I love this.
How awesome would that be
to
be like local food in Ohio. Here's where you can go look at it, figure it out. It's on your phone. And that's what everyone wants to use anyways.
Right.
It's their phone.
100%.
Exactly.
100%.
So
shop local Ohio, organic, boom.
For sure.
Well, we would love to know a few women in your life that have supported you, guided you, and molded you into the human you are today.
I have an incredible leadership coach right now who has been with me since she was a referral from my career coach. And so I've worked with her now for around 3 years. And it's just, you need that when you have a job that is pulling you in so many different directions because it's like, there's programmatic work, but like my job is so much, it's the whole thing, right? And it's all the people too, and trying to create a, you know, a fair and equitable, right? And sustainable and all those things, right? That we stand for like internally in the organization.
Totally.
Right.
And like, that just means change.
A whole lot of it.
I think.
What's your business coach's name? Give her a shout out.
Paige Robinette.
We'll find her and we'll tag her.
Yeah.
She's so fantastic.
Well, thank you for sharing so much with us. I think this is such an important topic. We would love to have you back if you want to talk about it more in depth, because I think this is a really, really crucial thing that we continue to talk about in the pod. So
we love it.
If you are interested in anything about OFA or shopping local or organic or just learning more about Ohio, what we have to offer and what all those guidelines and stipulations are, please make sure you see the show notes for links from today's episode. We are on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and iHeart.
And if this resonated with you or you live outside of Ohio, please look up your local area group that's doing the same things and support them and try to be involved in your community as much as possible.
Thanks, everyone.
You guys.
We love
you.
Thanks,
Kara.
Thank you.
Love you. Love you guys.